Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf Hayomi, the last and final Daf of our very dear Masechta, Maseches Avodah Zarah, Soren Ayin Vav Amud Aleph, four lines off the top. Ramilei Rav Amram. So Rav Amram asked a question, he presented an apparent contradiction to Rav Sheshes. So the starting point is our Mishnah, learned yesterday, Tanan, that items that were used directly on fire, so, you know, barbecuing, spit, a grill, etc., since they absorb the non-kosher material when they go use them in that manner, directly by the way of fire, as opposed to, you know, being cooked in a pot with water. So it was direct dry fire, so to speak. How do we extract that embedded, absorbed material? Likewise, using the same method. Direct fire, direct heat. A torch, right? It's none. So we learned in the Mishnah, Shvudin, the spitz, va'asklo, or a grill, malabnon bu'ur. You must do proper libun, by way of direct fire, to extract any embedded residue. But the thing is, we have a different Mishnah, which discusses a similar matter. This time, it's not about non-kosher use. It was equipment used to cook karbanos. You have the chatos, which is only meant to be eaten the day of and the following night. Shlomim is meant to be eaten the day of hakrava, the day that it's brought, the following night, and the following day. So it's day, night, and day. But then it expires, so to speak. It becomes noiser, becomes leftover, in which case it's forbidden to further, you know, consume that material or any flavor from that carbon that is sitting somewhere in a pot, in the walls of a pot. That too becomes noiser. So the question is, what do we do? He cooks the meat of the carbon today, and a day's time, you can't even use the pot anymore. The pot is now saturated with non-kosher, so to speak, material. Things which are nicer, which are expired, which may not be consumed. So what does the Mishnah say? We have to employ a similar system to our Mishnah with respect to non-kosher equipment. You have to kasher, you have to torch. That's none. But the Mishnah by Kachim, Gabi Kachim, presents it a bit differently. There's no need to torch anything. Hashudva askla magilan b'chamin, a spit, a grill. All you need to do is hag'ala, dip it into boiling water, and that does the job. Why does that suffice? Why don't you need to use direct fire? Just like we knew, we need an Al Mishnah when it comes to equipment taken from a goy. Ha'amalei, so Rav Sheshes responds to Rav Amram with an endearing, a term, Amram b'ni, my son Amram. Let me explain to you. Huge difference between the two. Ma'nin kachem, etzel gi'ulei v'gicham. How do you compare karbanis to non-kosher equipment? Hacha, over here by the karbanis. True. By now, the embedded, flavor, it is nicer, is expired. But initially, when it absorbed that flavor, it was fully kosher. Hacha hetera bala. It was veileya. It absorbed it when it was still permissible. See, the initial absorption, the initial interaction was fine. Hasa misura bala. As opposed to Maseches Avodah Zarah, where it's non-kosher equipment, it was veileya. It absorbed it. It interacted initially with something which was asur. It's a totally different, requires a totally different cleansing process. Because, the kli itself becomes integrally identified with the isur. So it has to be remade, rehashed, burnt out, totally recreated, so to speak, in order to rid it of the deeply embedded, molecules of isur material. As opposed to where it was a carbon, which was perfectly fine at the time. And then it became asur because it's past expiry date. So even a lighter method of hagala, which takes out, for the most part, the embedded residue, that's okay. Even though perhaps there's something deep inside which sort of becomes integrated with the actual metal or the material of the kli, that we leave that alone, because that sort of becomes bottled to the kli and we don't have to reckon with it. But if it was usher from day one, so everything in there, the kli itself became transformed to an entity of isra, you have to go ahead and burn it out completely. So that would be the difference between both contexts. Amar Rava, so Rava responds to this. Who cares, you know, at the point of integration, at the point of absorption, what it was? At the end of the day, right now, today, as we stand, the flavor, the tam, is aser. You have to get it out completely. Amar Rava, saif, ultimately, kikap palit. Whatever it's spitting out, meaning the stuff you have to get out of there, is suraka palit. Is iser material. Whether it was Isra from day one or from day 10, it doesn't matter. Right now it's us, we have to get it completely cleansed. Ella Marava says, Rava, you're right. You know, in both cases, whether it's over here, by the Zara, or by the Goyim, or it's the Karbanis, you do need proper Libun to burn it out completely. The point is that by Karbanis, there's an additional Chiyav, there's a Pasuk. Actually, in Parshas Tzav, this week's Parsha, that you have to do an extra cleansing system, you have to wash it, rinse it again. So that's the additional requirement. It's not to substitute for Libun. Elam Rava, Maya Gola Namim Rikav Shtifa. When the Mishnah by Kachem mentions Hagola for the spit in the grill, that's the Halacha of Rikav Shtifa. You have to rinse it, you have to wash it with boiling water. So that's on top of the Libun. So of course, Libun is required over here and over there. Except that over there we need an additional step of boiling water. Amli Abaye, Midam, how do you connect the word Hagala, which it typically describes, you know, being immersed in boiling water, to Merika Vishtifa, which is with just a rinse with cold water? Amli Abaye, Midam, how do you compare Merika Vishtifa? This term refers to a cool rinse, Bitsoinen. As opposed to Hagola, that's Bacham, that's with boiling water. You can't compare the two things. Sure, it needs Merikah v'Shtifa, but that's unrelated to Hagola, which is mentioned in that Mishnah. Elam Rabbi Sabai said, let me tell you. Let me give you a solution to this apparent contradiction. There's no contradiction at all. In both circumstances, you need both steps to be taken. Libun. Okay, burn it out with a torch, and Hagola, plus the boiling water treatment to extract any remaining residue. And then by Karbanis, we have an additional Chiyuv of Merikah v'Shtifa with cold water. So typically, a spit, a grill used over the fire, requires two steps to kasher, Libun and Hagola. By Karbanis, we need Libun, Hagola, and Merikah v'Shtifa with cold. Elam Rabbi Yagdal Avriya, this is a pasuk in Eiv. Let his friend explain. Meaning to say, now we have two Mishnahs speaking about similar circumstances. So each Mishnah looks over to his sort of colleague, to the other Mishnah, to gain additional clarity. Meaning, Ta Nahacha Liban, over here in Avi Dezara, Liban is mentioned. But in reality, Huadin La'Gola, Hagola as well is required, as we see in the other Mishnah. So sort of the Mishnahs complement each other. Tana Hasam Hagola. And by Kachem, it mentions Hagola. But in reality, Huadin Liban is required as well, as per the Mishnah over here. So the Mishnahs sort of complement each other and fill in for each other. Both processes are required. Hamolei Rava, so Rava responds to him. If that were the case, that both processes are required in both context, if that's the case, listeninu lekula b'chad. The Mishnah should have presented it like this. In one Mishnah, we have both. It should mention both steps, Libun and Hagola. V'listenichad b'idach. Achriti. And in the other Mishnah, it would only mention one of the two steps. Amri would say, okay, it really means both as per this Mishnah. V'leima, we will say, although in the second Mishnah, only one step is mentioned, really you need both steps as per our Mishnah. So the Mishnah complements the other Mishnah and clarifies it. If in fact that was the intent, it would present it like that. Two processes over here, and over there just one. No need to mention both, because we know it from here already. But now that it didn't do it this way, we have one Mishnah by Dezara, which only mentions Libun, ignores Hagala. One Mishnah by Karbanis, which mentions Hagala without Libun. It sounds like they're not complementing each other. It's actually pretty precise and accurate. This is what you do over here, and not the other. And this is what you do there, and not this. Elam Amar Rava says, Rava, let me explain to you why. In fact, by Karbanis, there's no need to do Libun, exactly as per the Mishnah. Typically, something used over dry fire requires libun, but not by karbanis. There's no issue of embedded residue. You know why? Kachem, hainu tamay. The reason why by karbanis is no concern. Kedar Rav Nachman. Amar Rabba Ravu. As per Rav Nachman's statement. Domar explained to us, because since those pots are constantly in use, so basically, the next karban extracts the previous karban's leftovers, and it sort of refreshes the kli. And then comes the next carbon and extracts the previous carbon's residue and embeds its own. So it's constantly being renewed and refreshed. You're constantly resetting the clock, so to speak. So there's never any residue in there that expires, that lasts, so to speak, past the expiry date. There's no issue of nicer in the pot, period. Dhamma explained, kol yom v'yom, every day, due to the continuous use, nasa gil chavera. So every day's use extracts the previous day's leftover. So there's no concern about anything going past expiry. Well, tenach shlomim, that works by a carbon shlomim. The kivin delishnei yamim is achle, since the carbon shlomim is eaten for 2 days, as we explained earlier, right? And you bring the carbon on Sunday. You have Sunday night, and Monday. So then it works, because by Monday, you'll already use it for the next carbon, and that, you know, expels Sunday's residue, and then you reset the clock. Mikami the nahava nicer. So before the Sunday's carbon got a chance to become nicer, kahava gil, it's already been expelled. Elachatas. However, if it's a carbon chatas that's being brought on Sunday and cooked in the spot, given the liam v'leinim misachlas, since that has a shorter span, it only asks for today and tonight. So by the time Monday comes along, it's too late. Yesterday's carbon in this wall of the kli is already nicer. So now on Monday, I turn around and use the same pot for a new chatas, it's too late. Have a nicer. There's nicer in the walls. So now kihadim ravashal bo lemachar or shlomo chatas. So again, on the next day on Monday, when I turn around and use it for a shlomo chatas, I'm stuck in hot water. Kikapolit nicer the chatas the idna. So it turns out that the kli is now going to be expelling and spitting out leftovers, noiser, the chatas, the idna of today's chatas, of Monday, Sunday's chatas, into tomorrow's carbon, b'chatas v'shlam d'lamachar, into Monday's carbon, chatas v'shlam, you're in trouble. Amri's answer was given like this, leitzricha, you're right, they have to arrange it, have to stagger it in a way to avoid this issue. D'chimavashal b'chatas ha'idna. So basically what they're going to ensure is that the last carbon that they cooked in the pot is a shlamim. So they can use it for chatas, sure, but then on that very day they have to, the last carb, last use is meant for shlamim. And shlamim will outlast, because it lasts for 2.5 days. So that's the answer. First they cook a chatas on Sunday. And then they follow with a shlamim on that very same day, which will last until the next day. So now today, means now, today, they use it again for a shlamim. And the shlamim has a longer shelf life, so to speak. It's going to last all the way to the end of Monday. So then on Monday, they're safe to use it. The chatas, the lamachar. So Monday, when they use it with for a chatas, that's okay. Or shlamim the esmal. So tomorrow's chatas corresponds in its expiry date to yesterday's shlam, to Sunday's shlam. Shlam the esmal, the shlam of yesterday, of Sunday. Bahadi adadika shlam zimnayu. Their time is shalom, sort of concludes at the same time, more or less. Basically, what he's saying, what the Gemara means to say, is that on Monday, things are still okay. Because Sunday is shlomim, on Monday is still kosher, so it's safe to use for Monday's chatas. But we don't end there. At the end of the day, we make sure to use the same pot for another shlam, which will sort of reset the clock and give us another 2 days to use it. And then we use it for another shlam on Monday. So since there's constant reuse and continuous cooking in this pot in a way that ensures that no residue expires, it's always fresh and reset and kosher, so why burn the pot? Why torch the pot? And that explains why no libun is required by karbanis. Ask the Gemara, okay, so then it's kosher. Without any concerns, why even boil it? Why does the Mishnah say you have to do hagala? You need nothing, kashin. That's an unresolved question. Rav Papa Amp, he says, let me give you another, I want to resolve this apparent contradiction. Why is it that by non-Jewish equipment you have to do libun, by karbanis only hagala? He says, hi karid, vai loy karid. The equipment used by a guy is karid. It's not used so continuously, right? So it congeals, it hardens, the residue hardens, and it's much more difficult to extract. You need a proper torching. Highly karid, but in Beis HaMikdash, since it's more or less being used constantly, right? So the stuff in the walls, you know, is sort of loose, not so deeply embedded, and doesn't, you know, congeal and get hard. So hagala is enough, even by torches and grills. Rav Ashi Amar, another terrace to this kasha. Lo'ilam k'damar mi'ikara. Let's go back to the initial suggestion. If it was used for non-kosher meat, it absorbed non-kosher meat. So the initial interaction was non-kosher. As opposed to karbanis, where the initial interaction was fine, but later on, the embedded residue expired and became non-kosher. Says Rav Ashi, that's a good answer to the question. Over here, by karbanis, it absorbed permissible material, and then later on expired and became yisur. As opposed to by the gayish equipment, it was baylaya yisur, the initial absorption related to non-kosher material. With kukashlech, regarding your question on that, Rabbi had a question, remember, the beidna, the kapalt, who cares what was initially? Currently speaking, the embedded stuff that you have to expel, yisur kapalt, is forbidden residue. So either way, it's forbidden, and the same treatment plan should apply to both. The answer is no. There is still a difference between the two, because be'idna to kapalit lo isay li yisura be'ine. The fact is that when the kli that's pilot, the carbon pot here. Right, the pot used for the karbanis is expelling, spitting out its isser. That's only because it's usser now. It was never really usser to begin with. There was nothing tangible. There was nothing forbidden in a tangible form. I.e., because when used it to cook the carbon was perfectly fine. So meaning to say, it became usser while it was sort of hidden in the walls of the kli. So it's not so severe. It's not so difficult. We can lower our standards, and even a hagala, which pretty much extracts more or less whatever's in there, is enough. And even if there's perhaps some molecules deep inside the raw material, we disregard it because it sort of becomes part of the kli, as opposed to when it was used for non-kosher. Well, it was non-kosher meat to begin with. The kli absorbed non-kosher material, whatever went into the kli, to the deepest you know, channels of the kli. Now, made the kli integrally usher, identifies with isser. You have to totally burn it out, remake it, reinvent the kli, so to speak. And that can only be done through torching. Okay, so let's just recap. We have the aloha of the shvu, the askala, item used directly on the fire. If it was used for non-kosher, libun is required. By karbanis, we only see hagala. The question was why. We have several explanations, the final one being that it's a big difference in terms of what, how it absorbed it initially. If it was classified as Isser, it requires a more intense job of extraction, i.e. Libun. Otherwise, Hagolah is required. But Kama Malavna, we speak about Libun, torching. At what point have you fulfilled Libun? How far do you have to go? Amar Abmani Asher Tashur Klipas, until the klipa, the surface, the top surface of the utensil has shed, has been burned through. V'ketad magilam. Okay, what about hag'olah? How do you go about doing hag'olah in boiling water? Amar Rapuna, yorek tan. Psech yorek gedoyle. Take a small pot, dunk it into a big pot with boiling water. What if you have a big pot to kasher? How do you get that kasher? You can't find the tank big enough to contain that. Yorek de lamai. What do you do there? Tashma. Let me explain to you how to do it. There was a story that who did a big tank, big vat, that was in need of kashering. Davoy be Rav Akavia, in the home of Rav Akavia, who was a great man, a Talmud Chacham. So what did he do to solve this issue? Ahadur le gadan for the leisha. He took a leisha as a piece of dough, and he built up the wall of the tank, made like a lip around the top surface of the kli's wall. So he sort of extended, he built up the wall. Apuma, right? At the mouth of, around the mouth of the kli. And he filled the big tank with hot water, and he boiled it, right? And now we have the inside of the kli totally kashered, as well as the lip on top, which is now being splattered by the bubbling water, which spills over, and it's going to stay there, it's going to do its job, because it's now contained by the extra lip, the dough that's containing that spillover. So that ensures that every usable surface, the actual inside and the lip on top, was treated by this boiling water. And the outside is not required, because you don't really use the outside for non-kosher. As long as the way it was used, that's how you, right? The way it was used, that's how you kosher it. It was used from the inside, that's enough for koshering as well. Amar Rava, man chakam. I'm very impressed. Who has the wisdom? Lema'abed ke milsa. Who's so smart to figure out this method? How to kosher a huge vat? Ilav Rav Akavi. If not for Rav Akavi, the Gavarabu was a great man. Because he held that it works. Even though the top lip was not really immersed in hot water, as long as there's splattering of water from the inside, that's enough, because that's how it absorbed the iser, through splattering from the inside, right? Because somebody, he figured, he held kib boiler the same manner in which it absorbs the problematic material, kach poter, that's how it expels it. Ma boiler bin it's just like the top lip of the wall of the kli absorbs through splattering from the inside, af poter bin it's likewise, it will extract it using the tzitzis, splattering from within. Rashi asks Akasha, why do you need that lip at all? Just fill it with hot water, and the water will automatically splatter on the top, surface of the wall. So he says, because you don't know if you'll hit every spot, but just using it one time in this manner. You see, this kli has been used for a while with non-kosher material. So splattering sometimes hits this spot, sometimes that spot, sometimes the other spot, right? It's not consistent, it's random, it's a random thing, right? So now when you kosher it, you don't know if your splattering will reach those very points that are absorbed with iser. The only way to ensure it does is build up the wall, create an extra, a containment, and then just boil it up until it gets higher and higher and spills over. So now it reached every spot on that top lip. Beautiful solution. Okay, what about a knife? Now, we're talking about a knife that a guy used for cold, let's say. But since there's the pressure factor, it's used for cutting, it's called duchka de sakina, that, pushes in the residue a bit deeper than just the surface. So to solve this issue, to use it for cold kosher, you have to actually scrape it, hasak and shafi, to scrape it either with a grinding stone, according to one pshat in Rashi, just with a baguette semer, a rough, wool material, right? Wool is known to be more, rough and coarse. Vitoyer, and the knife now is considered okay for use with tzainin, with cold. We're not done. There's another step to this process of kashering the knife. You have to stab it 10 times in the ground. Has to be untilled, soil, stiff soil, and you go in and out 10 times, and that completes the kashering. It's provided the knife on its surface has no gumais. It's smooth. It has no crevices on the sides. Otherwise, the fat and residue gets hidden inside. They will not come out through this scraping. Tanya, we find the same in the brisa. Sakan yofa shem agumis, a smooth knife without holes. Noyitza serpa makarka, you stick it 10 times in the ground. Amar v'nu Rishua lechel bat soinen, provided you can use it for cold. Where if you would try to use it for hot, Rashi says you have to go further than that. You have to do hagala as well. Tip it into boiling water to extract residue that's stuck, you know, deep inside, which will come out when you're going to use it for hot as well. Says the Mokiha, this 10 times in the ground is demonstrated with the following story. Kihada Mar Yehuda, there was an Amora by the name of Mar Yehuda, and a fellow, Ubati Bar Tuvi, Tesa says he was actually an Eved. Eved Kanani, who is partially considered like a Yid, right? He has the obligations like a woman. So they were sitting, Abu Yasfi, they were sitting Kamei in front of the Shvar Malka, a Persian king who was a guy, but apparently took a liking to the Yidden. And he was hosting them, and he served them none other than an esrog. Aisu l'kamay esrog, they brought before them an esrog. So the king picked up the esrog, pasak, he sliced a piece for himself, achlan, he ate it. Then he sliced another piece, pasak, v'havli l'bati bar tuvi, gave bati bar tuvi a piece, sliced with his non-kosher knife. But then before approaching Mar Yehuda with a slice, hadar dotza asar zimni b'ara, he took the knife, stabbed it 10 times in the ground to kasher it, and he scraped it as well, and then he offered a slice to Rabbi Yehuda. Pasak, he sliced off a piece of the esrog. Havle l'Mar Yehuda, gave it to Mar Yehuda. Amalei Bati Bar Tuvi. So Mar Yehuda's companion Bati was insulted. He tells the king, "What about me? I'm any less religious than Mar Yehuda? Why are you giving me from your non-kosher knife?" Va'ogaron, this man, meaning himself, La Bar Yisrael, he's not a Yid. Why did you not? Amalei. So the king responded, "Nah. I know that you're not the most righteous adhering Jew. Mar, the other person, Mar Yehuda, Kimli Begave, I know I can vouch for his righteousness and for his adherence to kashrus. That's why I took care to serve him well. But you, Umar, like Kimli Begave, I'm not really exactly sure that you're that you're so strict with your kashrus standards." Igad Amri, there was another version of his response that he actually put him down. Amalei tells Bati Bar Tuvi, "I know what you're all about. Itgar," he says, "remember what you did last night, something inappropriate, my avdus b'urto, you did at night, and that pretty much explains why I have no high regard for your religious commitments." Okay, in any case, we had the stira between over here and Karbanos, and we resolved it using several, terutzim. Liban needs to be properly torched until the klipa, gets burnt off. Hagala requires boiling water. We discussed how to kasher a large vat and how to cleanse a knife. Hadran lach, hasoicher es apayel, uslikala, mesechas avedezora. Oh, it's been a great pleasure learning together. A wonderful schus to go through such a wonderful mesechta, mesechta v'dezora, with a lot of halachas that are really practical and agei l'maisa. Bezal Hashem, we got enlightened, and hopefully we'll be zeicha to learn many, many more mesechters together v'simcha, gizon, panosa, nachas. Much b'siris teves. Thank you so much for learning together, and mazel tov, mazel tov.
I know you the nose is the Zeus at the Euro. He Elon who is the Euro. Oh, you think you don't know, you the nose is the Zeus at the Euro. He Elon who is the Euro. Now you've been now what's